Blog Talk Radio.
Wireless carriers love to gouge you for unlimited data. Come on! With T-Mobile One, you get unlimited at a price that doesn't break the bank. Right now, get two lines for just $100 a month with AutoPay. Taxes and fees included. All unlimited, all in. And for a limited time, get two free Samsung Galaxy S7s after rebate card. Why wait? Hurry to a store to switch today.
Top 3% of users greater than 28 gigabytes per month may notice reduced speeds. Activate HD video at no cost. Service price includes sales tax. Device offer requires port-in, trade-in, and finance agreements.
Blog Talk Radio.
Nazim is the author of Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self, a how-to manual for all those wanting permanent change in their lives. It is also a guide to virtually go back in time and eliminate all negative feelings associated with your past experiences that have caused any level of difficulty in your present life. Nazim has helped clients move from apathy to productivity, from codependency to loving themselves without attachment, from drug-addicted lifestyles to clean and sober positive examples, demonstrating what can be accomplished when one connects and stays connected to that which gives life. I am Dorothy Rashid, the co-host. Without any further ado, I bring to you Nazim Rashid.
Yes, thank you, my wonderful Dorothy. Well, it is another day in paradise. Yes, it is another day in paradise. Every time we see the sun, every time we notice the sun coming up, we tell ourselves it's another possibility and probability of a miracle, because the sun does wondrous things every day. Absolutely. Yes, so as soon as we see the sun, we tell ourselves there's another chance for me to be elevated to my next higher level of development. So yes, with that in mind, it is another day in paradise here in the Phoenix, Arizona area in the good old USA. I'm going to give a shout out to my friends in South Africa, Malaysia, Thailand. We have Germany, Singapore. I think I've covered them all. Yes. So I love my other country fans. And we've had over 23,000 hits so far on the Reconnected show. So I appreciate all those who have tuned in, and I'd love to hear from you. Mm-hmm, absolutely. So again, welcome all into our Paradise One studio, where every day is a holiday and the party never stops. Yay! Okay. All right. I don't know what happened to my studio audience just then, but it's okay. It's all good, all good. Welcome again to the Reconnected Show, which is based on the chapters in my book, Reconnected. So, we always start with a nice universal opening prayer. And like I've mentioned before on this program, whatever name or reference fits your belief system will do just fine when I am mentioning God. Just know that we did not create ourselves. And in knowing this reality, we can give attention and honor the source of our creation for guidance and direction. I'm using God as an universal theme and is not relegated to a particular religion or belief system. With the name of God, we thank you for the opportunity to serve. Thank you for the willingness you have instilled in us to give of ourselves to others. Thank you for the open minds we have to receive more from you in areas that we are familiar with and in areas which we are unfamiliar. Thank you for the open minds that we are interacting with as we spread your message of hope, promise, and opportunity. Amen. All right, with that in mind, we're moving on to our show notes. Dorothy, take it away.
We all have experienced disappointments in our past, and some of us have not reconciled those issues. In order for us to travel wonderfully on our healthy path of life, we have to release all unnecessary baggage that is preventing us from going full speed ahead. This is what Nazim's book, Reconnected, and this program is designed to do. Let us hear from you as we learn together how discovering the needs of our child self can make a substantial difference in our lives. The long-awaited book, Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self, is available now at www.cloudsofabundance.com, amazon.com, Healthy Habits Health Food Store in Phoenix, Arizona, Jazzy Yogurt Shop in Scottsdale, Arizona, and Barnes & Noble's website, available on Nook and Kindle also. The chapters in the book and the themes of this Reconnected show are forgiveness, validation, self-esteem, visualization, self-image, communication and listening skills, optimism, gratitude, faith, spirituality, codependency and addiction, recovery issues, identifying and managing emotions. You can connect with Nazim using his email address, nrbookclub@gmail.com, or his website, cloudsofabundance.com. You'll find information such as live coaching, book signing dates, webinars, and workshops. All live coaching is done through your phone, so you can have sessions with Nazim wherever you may be in the world. Life coaching is about removing the obstacles and encouraging you to go beyond your perceived barriers to the accomplishment of your dreams and aspirations. Life coaching is also about results now and creating the future that you want versus counseling that spends a lot of time in healing the past. Healing the past is also important and something Nazim does with his book and book-related events. It's time to be reconnected and time for the new you. Nazim?
Yes, it is. Thank you again. Yes, it is time for the new you, the time for the new you. And if you really think about it, it is time for the new you. Mm-hmm. Don't you think so? Yes, absolutely. All right. Very good. So the Reconnected Show, this is a personal growth program. I'm sure you probably got that by now. Designed with your inner peace in mind, your inner peace in mind. Mm-hmm. Very good, important. Very important to understand that. The discussions will be based on the chapters, directly or indirectly, in my book, Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self. This book contains a methodology for filling the many emotional voids experienced in childhood. You will learn to become a time traveler. Yes, you will learn to become a time traveler. Isn't that fun? Time traveling. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, they have a new program coming on called Fringe. Yes. It's talking about time travels. Fun. And of course, that old one with the Michael Fox, Back to the Future. Yes, and Reconnected. You'll learn how to travel back in time. Yes, to the place of your upbringing, becoming a senior advisor, next door friend of the family, and mentor to your child self. You will create the fictional character, the mentor, you, acting as a mentor or godparent to your child self. You will have sessions with your child self as you address those negative events that you still carry with you and change the outcome to one of your desire. Isn't that wonderful? This way, you will create real internal change in your life and be free of the negative effects of unresolved past issues. Hear that? Unresolved past issues. Too many of you are still carrying these unresolved past issues with you. Stop it. Yes. It is also for parents who want new information for raising the best emotionally balanced children possible. Mm-hmm. I have a three-part parenting video on YouTube right now, actually, based on my book. Just go to YouTube.com and put in the search, Reconnected, The Parent's Manual. Reconnected, The Parent's Manual. You'll see it pop up right there. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Free videos. Reconnected is also for mentors who can appreciate additional tools for their mentees and teachers who would share more methods for shaping, motivating, and inspiring our students, reflecting the greatness that they already possess within. Couples, it's also a relationship manual. Yes, couples wanting a better, healthy, long-lasting relationship can also benefit from the personal growth tools offered, such as communication and listening skills. Those in recovery will benefit from Reconnected, as I have over 100 pages dedicated to addictions, codependency, and recovery in my 12 Principles of Recovery chapter and codependency chapter. Right? Mm-hmm. This recovery program is not just for those afflicted with drug addictions. It is also beneficial to those suffering from anger, abuse, compulsive disorders, overeating, gambling, sexual, and controlling issues. Reconnected is also for any individual who wants to consciously connect to their higher self, to spirit, source energy, to God. You see, it is really a multi-purpose manual. Six manuals in one. Parents' manual, teacher's manual, a recovery manual, mentor manual, relationship manual, a manual, like a human manual, I call it, for the transformation of your negative experiences to positive memories, loving yourself at deep levels, and creating the life you have always desired. Fantastic. Yes, 412 pages and 14 chapters. Get it. Yes, and like Dorothy said, you can get it. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and cloudsofabundance.com. All right. Now, we always do a happy news segment, and you regulars know you can always tune in to the Reconnected show to hear something good, healthy, happy, joyous. And with that, we have at our international and national news desk. Dorothy, take it away.
The name of today's article is Love, Sweat, and Tears. Couples who found love on the Olympic training field. Written by Sharika Dhani from Today.com. When Olympians Matt Emmons and Katie Kirkova met at a beer garden at the 2004 Olympics in Athens, they were both in relationships with other people. Katie, a sports shooter from the Czech Republic team, approached Matt with her father to console him after his disappointing performance in the 50-meter rifle position finals. He had fired at the wrong target and dropped from gold medal contention to eighth place. I just wanted to say how sorry I was, but that in my heart, he still was the champion by far, Katie said on Tuesday. The shooters noticed the romantic spark at that time, but we really didn't talk about our feelings, Katie told Today.com on Tuesday following the televised segment. There was something I really fell in love with. Something clicked. 8 years later, Matt and Katie Emmons are happily married. Proof that lasting romances can be kindled amid the heightened atmosphere of the Olympics. Their love story is a counterpoint to the usual reports about condom use and scandalous hijinks at the athletic village every 4 years. The turning point for Katie and Matt came a year after they met, when Matt's coach decided to start a training camp for female shooters at the U.S. Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, Colorado. The goal of the camp was to boost the women's program. Katie, who is a U.S. citizen but competes for the Czech Republic, joined reluctantly after considering retirement. After Athens, I had no motivation. All the media and press got to me after the Olympics, she said. I was 20 back then, and being a medalist from a small country is huge. It was too big for me. When he saw Katie train at the camp, Matt convinced her to pick up the rifle again in competition. You haven't lost anything, he said. You should give it another chance. Watching Matt train for the three-position rifle inspired her, because you can see he's going after it. His training paid off. Matt picked up a long-awaited medal in three positions when he won bronze on Monday after his final shot mishap in Athens and a similar incident in 2008 in Beijing. Matt got me back shooting, Katie says. He talks about shooting with such passion. With Katie's comeback came romance. When we saw each other, nothing had changed, even though we hadn't talked in almost a year, Matt said. So at that point, we decided to give it a go. The couple married in 2007, and their daughter, Julia, came 2 years later. While they agreed their daughter will have an active lifestyle, they won't pressure her to follow in her parents' footsteps. Even so, Olympic rings may already be in the cards for Julia. The other day, she said to me, Mommy, I can run fast like Daddy, and Mommy, I want to shoot, Katie said. That seriously made me cry, said Matt. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of the story, but for people that want to go and look and read this and see the pictures that come along with this, they can just Google or go to today.com and just look up the story, Love, Sweat, and Tears, Couples Who Found Love in Olympic Training.
Oh, okay. It's called Love, What? Say it again, the title, please.
Love, Sweat, and Tears.
Oh, Love, Sweat, and Tears. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear the sweat. Okay, Love, Sweat, and Tears.
Yes.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. Well, very good. All right, very good. We'll see. Yes. So, you know, true love is still possible out here in the world of disbelief. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Things can really happen out here and be real, and couples can have a committed relationship and despite circumstances, you see, so... You never know what it might happen. That's a very good story. Very good story. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So all you are saying it can happen, and I can't find Mr. Right. Don't worry about finding anybody. Just find the good in yourself and be the mate that you're trying to get. Be the change that you're seeking. Yes. Be the one inside. And when you be that one, you'll naturally be attracted to the one you need to be with, and they'll be attracted to you. Absolutely. Fantastic. Good story. All right, then. Today's theme, isolation versus insulation in childhood, part two with Dr. Douglas Brown. All right, on the last session with Dr. Brown, he talked about insulation and isolation and the differences. Insulation refers to keeping what we want in and protection from outside elements. Pretty natural, healthy position. Without this kind of protection, the child will grow up with low self-esteem and feel vulnerable outside of the home and greater propensity for fear. Insulation is a healthy position parents can choose as they are protecting their young. In isolation, the parents try to quarantine the child from outside effects, to create a hygienic environment, no germs, and disconnected and detached from life. Again, detached from life. Isolation stunts growth and healthy development. Inferiority feelings stem from isolation and an inability to socialize appropriately. When you pair up this isolation with not witnessing any resolutions to conflicts, you have the child experiencing a detachment from not only others, but to their own positive feelings. This is unlike the term dissociation. I'll kind of mention that because it's also a way of separation. Dissociation is separating the sense of self or consciousness from reality. In isolation, the person tries to separate the memories of the event from the emotions as a defense mechanism. When some parents, intending to keep all conflicts away from the child, go outside and completely hide all conflicts, Dr. Brown said, that is a recipe for disaster. The child won't know what to do when they see conflict. They might go into a state of shock. Asthma, in some cases, originate from parents isolating the kids from dirt, keeping them spotless day and night. Now, I'm sure we have a lot of questions from this and what's coming up. So today we'll continue this series with Dr. Brown as we look at the various developmental stages our children go through under parental isolation. Dr. Brown, are you there?
Definitely, and glad to be here this morning.
All right. The audience is ready to hear you. I'm sure that after a while, when Malaysia wakes up, it's probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning there, and my family, they hear your show. They say, oh, my God, you know, next time we'll stay up all night long and hear it.
My goodness, yeah.
Absolutely. Now, I got some questions. Before we start, before we go into this great program, a quick little question here. And when I was going over the last show, you had said that in isolation, the person tries to separate the memories of the event from their emotions as a defense mechanism. I got a big question mark there. Can you elaborate a little more on that topic, that sentence?
Okay, I'll start with that. If I experience something that's extremely frightening and stressful, I may recall it. I may remember the event itself, but I certainly don't want to feel those same feelings again.
Okay.
And this is what that is. That's an example. Let's say I go to a very frightening movie, a monster movie or something.
Okay.
I get together with friends and we're laughing and talking about it and everything, but I don't want to experience those emotions.
Okay.
I don't want to do that again. So that's what that is. That's what I meant by that. And see, subconsciously, when a person has memories of very traumatic experiences, very stressful situations, very frightening situations, when they have these memories, they either, it depends on the situation. It depends on the person. An individual will do certain things to try to protect themselves from those memories. What can I do to smother these memories or, you know, kind of change the channel in my mind so that I don't have the same kinds of feelings?
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, how I go about doing that reflects really how I have been taught to cope. How I have been taught to cope in the context of insulation and isolation in life. And I guess that's a good springboard for me to go into today's discussion.
Mm-hmm.
It will become clear what I'm trying to say.
Okay, good, because I had a question about that. Because in isolation, you see that relating to a person, either the horror movie or some of the frightening events, if you can just kind of pair that to an isolation parenting style that they came from, that would be wonderful.
That's right. That's and you. I want you to help me and keep me on track here.
Alrighty.
you know, the first 2, 3, 5 years of life are very critical. You know, there are individuals, for example, who strongly believe that those first 5 years of life are most important in terms of the fundamentals of a person's personality, the individuality, because so much happens in those initial years. So much happens, you see, in those initial years when I'm a toddler, 5 years old, preschool.
Mm-hmm.
So very important. Now, there's a second factor here that I'd like for your audience and you all to consider in the context of isolation, insulation.
Mm-hmm.
Early on in our development, when we are very small children, we spend most of our time at home. We spend most of our time with family members, parents, brothers and sisters, what have you, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So, we're not talking necessarily about isolation on the outside of the house. We're not talking about isolating the child from negative influences across the street. We've got to look at what occurs within that immediate family environment. What is happening in that house? What is the nature of that environment that the child has to be isolated from? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's first talk about insulation. Insulation in those early developmental years.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important that a small child feels safe. I want to feel safe. I want to feel secure. I want the big people that I'm around and my brothers and sisters. I want to have this sense of attachment. We all love one another. Basically, I want to be at home. I want to basically have this sense that there's nothing to be afraid of. That this potential in me, in terms of this rapid brain development, I can do my best to express much of my potential at that particular age in life. There's no reason that I have to press or hold back on expressing myself, because the home environment is safe, it's lovable, there are no reasons for fear. All right, you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay, so far, yes.
Yeah, this constitutes insulation. It's a natural environment, it's a home environment, it's a loving environment. I'm getting it. But that's insulation as well. Now, what is it that I have to be isolated from in that same environment? Let's look at some of the things that I should be isolated or protected from in the environment. I should be protected from any form of serious neglect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Physical neglect, emotional neglect, isolated or protected from physical abuse.
Mm-hmm.
I should be isolated or protected from excessive violence or aggressiveness in the house, not outside. In the house. Because if my brothers and sisters and siblings are fighting, and my parents are fighting, that's not conducive to a safe environment. It's not conducive to an environment where, you know, it's an environment that's ridden with violence. It's ridden with negative feelings. It's ridden with fears and suspicions. All of this translates to stress and trauma for me as a small child.
Okay.
This environment should be one where I should be growing up and I should be feeling happy. I should be a dynamo of energy.
Mm-hmm.
In life. My parents have to spend most of their time trying to protect and keep me from doing things to hurt myself because I nothing out there I'm scared of.
Okay.
Focus here in this very early stage of life is that much of the toxic influences, things that can have a very negative effect upon emotionally and psychologically, a lot of this initially takes place right there at in the home, in the house.
Okay.
So my parents, not mine literally, but anyone, one's parents have to have an intuitive understanding of what it means to nurture and rear the child, to provide adequate attention, because I like attention, I want to show off, I want to show you how much I can do. At this stage in life, I call it wording. Wording is when I'm learning so many words. I got a new word every day. I'm slinging half sentences together, saying my name. I'm parroting things I hear maybe on TV.
Yes.
I'm constantly running up to you, wanting to tell you what I did in school and kindergarten today. Or sometimes I tell you I don't want to eat vegetables and all of this. In other words, what's emerging is a sense of self. What's coming out of me is an identity. These are the first threads of my relations with other human beings. Now, in that kind of environment, I've got my weaknesses. Everybody has. There's no human being that does not have weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
Fact of life. But if I am in a wholesome, if I'm in a loving environment, if I'm in an environment where when I feel bad as a child, or I may have a moment where I feel like you don't care for me or something, if there are parents around me who are able to verbally express to me, hold me, and tell me they love me, where I'm in an environment where I'm shown how to love other human beings, whatever these weaknesses that I may have, or I think I have, they are eclipsed by this love. They're eclipsed by this early nurturing, this early acceptance, this safety. So right in the house, very beginning, right inside the house, I am actually being isolated from very negative, toxic potential situations that can have very negative effects. I'm going to give you some examples.
Okay.
Let's say that I'm in a house situation. I'm living in a home situation. I may be a middle child. I may have brothers and sisters. You know, the sequence isn't as important.
Sure.
Let's say I may be in a house where my parents get in arguments, and everybody argues. People don't agree all the time. But for whatever reason, my parents don't understand that they shouldn't be really doing this in front of me like that. Or they should not be putting me in front of the television and not monitoring what I'm looking at, even though I really can't understand it. They should be monitoring it. So let me tell you, let's say that for example, I'm subjected to conflict and what have you with parents and siblings, and put in these negative situations.
Mm-hmm.
Soon enough, I'm going to start developing very strong fears. I feel frightened a lot. I'm scared to venture out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scared to go. I'm scared. Now, if the home environment is safe and I'm scared, I've got a sense of safety so I can move in that direction. But it compounds any fears that I may have of outside of the house. I'm a child, and what is it? What occurs when a child has a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear? Well,
right.
What the child does, and this is not done consciously, this is something we do naturally. We begin to halt. It's like you drive a car and you stop.
Mm-hmm.
We start halting and we start taking detours. in terms of our natural, spontaneous development. We become hesitant. We become, a small child may become afraid and self-conscious. A small child will anticipate anxiety, will anticipate danger, because the child twice or three times a week sees his or her parents getting in a fight.
Okay.
So that environment right in the house isn't really, really good. Now, let alone separation anxiety, okay? Separation anxiety is a term we use, late term, it's a professional term, when a child, you know, when a child begins to go outside of the house and for a couple of weeks or so, a few days, the child reacts to being separated from mommy, most of the time from mama.
Right.
Okay. She takes him or her outside. But imagine a situation where you have this separation anxiety. Okay, you separated from my parents and being in the house, but that's also, that overlays anxiety that I have at home. It, either direction I go, what is it that I'm experiencing? I'm experiencing an excessive degree of anxiety and fear. Now, you keep me aboard. You keep me online.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, that three-year-old, that five-year-old is nothing but a ball of wax. It's a dynamo of energy.
Right.
And I want to show off. I want to show you what I made, these strings I put together, these Legos that I put together.
Mm-hmm.
I want to show you how much I know. Your job is to tell me, that's great. Your job is to tell me it's acceptable. Your job is my parents to tell me that's good, you know. It reminds me of I'm thinking about a commercial on TV now. This guy's grandfather, and he's taking his grandson fishing.
Okay.
And all they have is a twig and a string. Granddad is next to his son, and he's taking this, you know, he's throwing it into the pond. And as they're walking away from the pond, Grandpa says, now you're a great fisherman, right?
Okay.
Now your grandpa say, well, you know, you didn't do too good today. You didn't catch anything. How do you think I feel?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Your failure.
Okay, let's go. We're still in the house. We're not outside the house. Let's take it to the TV. That electronic parent, right?
Okay.
Oh, okay. Turning on the cable channel. All these horror movies coming out. All these movies where you got all these car wrecks, these crashes, violence,
mm-hmm.
shooting one another and carrying on. You know, a small child should not be subjected to that, even on television. You know, the brain, the nervous system, the reactive nervous system, all of the neural systems that govern our feelings and emotions, the autonomic nervous system. A child shouldn't be subjected to all of that type of stuff. It may be quote unquote exciting. The child may be looking at the television as if they're fixated to it, but that's not what the kind of thing that child should be subjected to repeatedly. And that constitutes a form of stress and trauma. Any kinds of violence, any types of stress, feedback that you're not good enough, child in situations where they're observing, you know, their parents fighting, they hear screams, it's dangerous. All of this is communicating dangers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of stuff that the child should be protected from.
And this would be an area of insulation here you're talking about. That's where it should be, right? Okay.
Yeah, this is insulation.
Okay.
All right. That's what the house should be. The house should be, I should be insulated from this type of stuff.
Exactly. Gotcha.
But you know, it's actually occurring in the very environment where I shouldn't have it occur. See? Now, this guy named, many of your audience, I'm sure that there's some in your audience that are familiar with Dr. Alfred Adler. You know, I know you're Alfred Adler.
Oh, yeah.
Alfred Adler's perspective on personality development, on individual development. One of the things I like about Adler's theory is it is so practical. It is very practical. He emphasizes interpersonal interactions. He emphasizes interactions with other people. And he says this is very critical in the early stages of life. Now, I want to look at two, so to speak, what Adler calls, I'll tell you. These are examples. The examples I'm going to give you, one of them is an example of what occurs in isolation, situations where children are isolated from interactions with other children, you know, playing with other children, going outside of that house. In other words, it's a much wider world, understanding where they're isolated from contact and interaction with the larger, broader world. Adler said one of the results of this is a child with what he called a pampered child.
Okay.
Pampered child. Basically, a pampered child is a child that's given what he or she wants, even beyond it. They're pampered. We all know what it means. You know, no.
Oh,
home,
yeah.
No scratches. You know, no disappointments. No tears. Pamper the child. See, this is actually a form of negative isolation. Would you agree? You see what I'm saying?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I got you. I'm following you. Oh yeah.
Pampered. You know, pampered. Now, the parents who are pampering this child, they think this is love. They think, oh, we're protecting our child. We love our child, right? No, that's a form of isolation. That's a form of separating the child from the normal experience of early life, of early interaction. And you see, in some cases, this kind of isolation that takes the form of pampering children can lead to serious problems later on in life, in adolescence, in preschool, even in adulthood. If you pamper somebody and you spoil someone, what happens? They become very selfish. They feel that their needs and wants take priority over anybody else's. They're not able to connect with other human beings, have empathy toward others. And this is what happens when you have a pampered child.
All right, tell you what, let's take that whole thing, that wonderful generalization, down to the specific age of two, you know, during a time when these kids are feeling their oats, so to speak. They have a lot of high energy, and they're kind of all over the place. They're exploring everything. And let's take that same parenting style to this two-year-old and talk about how that child will, like, how the child is affected.
Let's look at it in terms of, quote-unquote, my room, okay?
Okay, okay.
Right.
Okay. So, that's a good one.
See, yeah, because my room, psychologically, will eventually evolve into my life. It will eventually evolve into my world, you know, what I think belongs in my world and who belongs in my world, okay?
Mm-hmm.
My room. Now, my room as a pampered child, I'm pampered now, and in my room, above the kinds of things that ordinarily you would expect in my room, you'd expect a few toys to stimulate me, you know, my senses. You'd expect quilts and things. You'd expect toys that are conducive to my physical growth and, you know, walking and talking. You'd find toys that nowadays, you know, we have toys with recorders built into them that speak to children.
You're right.
In my room as a pampered child, you'd find probably stacked almost to the ceiling all kinds of toys and gadgets in my room.
Mm-hmm.
In my room, whatever I want, whenever I want it, it's going to be in my room. You're probably going to see clothing of sorts, things that I haven't even worn yet. The tags haven't been taken off of them. So, in my room.
All right. All right.
See, the pampered child, right? Pampered child. I'm pampered. I'm given whatever I want, when I want it. Mama or daddy doesn't say, no, you can't have this now. No, you got to learn to wait. See, so when I want it, I get it. I'm pampered. I'm also overprotected in my room. And one of the things I'd like to add here, this isn't very common, but it does happen. There may be many people in your audience that are not aware of this, but that's okay. In some families, their parents and elders teach them that they are superior to other children.
They're
better than other children. You know why you have all of this in your room? Because you're better than other children. That's pampering.
And pampering is under the subcategory or one of the subcategories of isolation parenting style, right?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Yes. It's isolation, and can I use another I word?
Okay.
It's indoctrination.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's indoctrination. Mm-hmm. Okay, because in order to pamper you and be successful, I have to indoctrinate you too. And the indoctrination is that you are number one. You can get whatever you want from me. My job is to give you whatever you want. You're better than. You should have more. See?
Mm-hmm.
That's the pampered child.
The whole time, right there. Now, how about the relationship or the connection between this pampered child and their parents? Let's talk about respect and how this child sees the parent.
Well, there, you know, the child, of course you know this. When the child is young, the child hasn't reached the cognitive stage yet where they can, they see their parents as a vehicle or a means to get what they want.
Okay.
There is not, I love my parents because they are my parents. I love them because I can get what I want from them. See, you don't have the workings of respect there. You don't have the workings of a healthy relationship between a young person, a child, and a parent. See, the parents' behavior, depending on the extent to which they pamper the child, maybe even borders on a kind of idolatry in a way, you know?
Hmm.
The parents' behavior is as if they live for, give everything for, do anything for the child, with the understanding that that's not the way it should be done.
Mm-hmm.
So, in effect, the child is what? The child is separated and isolated from reality, from the real world, from the world of give and take. from the world of sharing, from a world where this young human being, this child, understands you're not better than anybody else. You're not worse, but you're certainly not better. You're not superior to anybody, you know, where this child can learn to interact and relate with others.
Before you go into the next little segment, talk about the same child. Now, you have the same child in public. You say you take the mother takes this pampered child into the mall.
Disaster.
What happens?
Let's not go by any toy stores. Get a map of the wall. Come on, find out where those toy stores are, or where they got the cotton candy and anything like that. Because when that pampered child goes by the toy store or the candy and turns around to mom and say, "Mommy, mommy, get me some of that," about, and mommy doesn't do it, they may have to call mall security. I don't want to. The thing about a pampered child, you see, someone like this, is that a child is quote unquote given everything they want when they want it. This individual is detached, not just from others. They're detached from their true self as a human being. They're not being allowed to experience, want. They're not being allowed to understand. You can't have everything when you want it. I wanted to say a few things about another dimension of this kind of isolation, if you let me, Nazim, because I don't want to run time. And in a way, it's the polar opposite of the pampered child.
Okay.
You know who that is?
Uh-oh.
That is the neglected child.
Mm.
Right? You can overdo it both ways. You can give too much. You can give excessively. But in the other direction, you don't give enough.
Okay.
The child is neglected. Neglected children, right, are very fearful. They anxiety, feelings of that they're not being not loved. They're not being accepted. There's no real attachment. They're not being accepted by their caretakers and by their parents. You know, the people around them that should give them messages that they care for them. The neglected child never really learns how to interact with others. There are simply too many cases, innumerable cases of child neglect, as we know. Children that are neglected develop serious emotional problems. We've all heard it in one form or another. Neglected children actually experience depression. Feeling unloved, feeling alone. And you see, sometimes children can be fed. You know, you can give a child food 3 times a day. You know, the child may be clothed and fed, but the child still may be a victim of neglect.
Mm-hmm.
A victim of emotional neglect.
Mm-hmm.
A victim of nutrients. A victim of that pat on the back, or that smile, or that I love you, or that you just do the best you can. That type of neglect.
Right there is to talk more about that, because you have families where you have a sense of love, and you'll get the hugs, you'll get the smiles, and all that, but the child will still feel emotionally neglected. And let's talk about that a little bit, because a lot of times the people say, well, you know, there's a whole lot of love in that family. That child was always loved, but if you look in that child's eyes, you see something else differently. So let's talk about really emotional attention and what that really means.
Okay, You know, I tell you, the critical situations that really expose, not so much expose in a negative way, situations that really show whether or not my parents love me is when I disappoint them, is when I do something wrong. If I get the cookies out of the jar, and what happens to me is their reaction is not just to tell me that was wrong, but to yell at me and hit me, or to make disparaging comments, cursing me, or belittling me. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
They can spend the whole week telling me how much they love me, okay? But in those critical moments where I don't obey, I'm acting up, I did something wrong, okay? If the parents are mature and they understand the nature, how to, you know, discipline their children, they discipline them appropriately. They discipline in a way so that the child realizes that it's, you know, this is a negative consequence because of something you've done. It's not that I don't love you. I don't like what you did.
Okay.
See the difference?
Oh, yes.
You see, it's a difference between a child, an interaction between a child and a parent where the child clearly understands that mama or daddy is doing this because I did something wrong, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's not the same as I'm being punished because I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the child should not be left with that interpretation and that perception. You know, we can't try to control our children's minds, but a parent should reassure to that child that you're being punished, or the consequence, this is what you're getting because of what you did. You know, we still love you. This is because of what you did. So it has to be balanced.
Now, if it's not balanced, would a child feel that some level of emotional abuse?
Of course. The child is confused. If there's no clarity, the child says, but wait, I thought you liked me. I thought you loved me.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you punishing me? Why are you saying this to me now? See, it's so subtle, and to most of the time, we don't even think about it as parents. You know, we grow up in situations, we become parents. It's not right there on the radar screen, but it's very important. It's very important with small children, with our children, that when they error, you know, when they violate our rules, they've got to be told, they've got to understand that they shouldn't do it. In their growing years, they've got to understand early on that there are consequences. But what is most critical and also important is teaching them and clarifying to them that they are meeting with these consequences and maybe meeting with a harsher tone because of what they did or did not do, not because of them. This is a difference. I've actually, see, a child that is correctly, the child is going to disobey. You know, child's going to disappoint, disobey, kind of get your ire up, so to speak. But those are the moments and the situations where a child, a toddler, and we're talking more of an older child now, where there is a sense of that the child is developing a sense of what it means to love someone or care for them correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, my youngest daughter, I never forget the first time that I had to punish her. I was telling her why I had to punish her.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what she did?
What's that?
It was so sorrowful, she started crying. I was telling her why I had to punish her, and she started crying. She didn't start crying because she felt I didn't love her. She started crying because I was explaining to her that it was hard for me to do it, but she did something wrong. She erred, and you follow my drift. You follow.
Oh yeah. Oh yes.
Because in the absence, you see, in the absence of that balance of love and affection, in the absence of that, the child is confused. What kind of world is this that I live in? So, with a few minutes left today, let's go. We'll go back to the major themes: insulation or isolation.
Okay.
These young children, I have to end the home. See, what we focused on in this segment is I have to isolate them from interactions, experiences, and situations that cause anxiety, fear, loneliness, childhood depression. Effective parenting is a form of insulation. Effective parenting does what? It provides safety, security. It's a clean environment. It's not a, you know, it's like you spoke earlier in the introduction to the show. You know, it's clean, but it's not hospital clean to the extent that this child is not being exposed to natural types of elements.
Exactly.
I hope that clarified to some extent what is meant by insulation and isolation in the home. I didn't even want to start outside.
No, I think you did a good job there. I'm glad you're kind of bringing it to a close there because we have to do that anyway because of the time. But I want to make sure that everybody understands that there are so many avenues in both of these categories of isolation and insulation. That's why we're taking our time with this. I didn't know it myself, actually, you know?
Most of us don't.
And so many areas, and I look at my own life, and I see I had a kind of isolated situation, but some parts were more insulation. So it's kind of a mixture sometimes there, you know?
It is. It has to be. That's life. It's always a mixture of insulation and isolation. And nobody's perfect.
And it's really interesting to see. So that's why we're doing this. We want everybody to kind of look at it from a couple, maybe a few aspects. If you are a parent, this is so critical to know and really internalize as you're having kids or even before you have kids, so you know exactly what position you are to take with your little ones. For sure, and not to bring your own baggage in there and impose that on your child, because like what happens, you didn't correct things in your own past, you didn't reconcile your past, and then you go and reconcile it on your children. So don't do that. That's a major sin right there. You know, so don't do that. So this is why we're doing this. So we're going to stop now, and we're going to bring Dr. Brown on again in November here to continue this excellent idea of insulation and isolation, and we want to encourage you to call in. A lot of you are calling in most of you are calling after the show because maybe this time on Saturday does not work for you. That's okay, you know. But we'd like for you to post questions either on the chat room live, or you can email us at nrbookclub@gmail.com or on the message board on blogtalkradio.com/reconnected, and you can click message and leave a message there too. So you all kind of ways you can give us feedback, and we'd like to know where you're calling from, where you are letting us know you're listening from, so we can add that to our list of fan bases. We'd like to know where you're from and what your concern is, and what's really working for you out there, and what kind of shift are you receiving from the reconnected messages. We'd love to hear that. So we're never going to stop the show. And we're going to start next time with this idea of insulation and isolation at his early years. 2 years old, we might not finish the two, but we're going to start 2 or 3 or somewhere around there. And we're going to continue where we left off here so we can have a real good idea of what parenting style that we've been influenced under. And if that's been a problem for you, how you can reconcile that. Because that's one of the main areas of reconnected is learning how to reconcile these issues. So, you know, you have to know, like Dr. Phil says, you can't change what you don't acknowledge, you know? And so you have to know what you're dealing with, what you're trying to reconcile, who you're forgiving, and so you move on with your life. And the whole idea is having a life of freedom and possibilities. Have a nice free life and enjoy life and smile and not be sprawling all the time and worrying what's going to happen tomorrow and be sad when the sun comes up. Don't be sad when the sun comes up. Be happy and joyous and love yourself and others. But you can't do this fully until you clean up and get rid of the stuff that's gnawing at you like little parasites from the past. So that's why we're doing this show, you know. So, Dr. Brown, thank you for this excellent interpretation of insulation and isolation. And
thank you so much, Nazim. Thank you. Joy.
This is wonderful. So everybody, come back next time. We're going to have a rebroadcast show next week on self-image. But we want everybody to kind of tune in. We're doing a wonderful series now looking at childhood wounds. And this is a real key area because, you know, I taught adults who were pampered as kids. And when I taught them about the reconnected model, they say, I don't need that. I had a perfect life. Well, I guess so. They ran over everybody. Yeah, I'm telling you. And so think about it. If you're on top of the bulldozer, your life is fine. Think about it. You're sitting in the driver's seat on the bulldozer, and in that position, your life is wonderful.
Oh, my.
You know, but what happens, people underneath you are suffering. And so it's real important to understand that you can't have a full life if your life now is built on the destruction of others. And so it's not going to work like that. Eventually, it's going to have a real problem. So that's why it's important to look at a healthy life. So everybody wins, not just you, or because you are stronger, or you have more of a dominant presence, a personality, and you just were able to kind your way into someone else's life and take over. No. It's very important that you have a full life. Full life comes from you being an instrument of help and service for others. That you're able to lift others up and help other people where they are, and that's what gives you a full life. Not you dominating, but you helping. And so that's where we are right now. So, again, Dr. Brown, thank you again. And we're looking forward to you.
Thank you again, Nazim.
Yeah, we're looking forward to you. Hey, man, I love it, man. Tell you what, I'm going to talk to you after the show. It's so many things I want to do here. We're going to make sure it happens, you know. So thank you again,
okay.
And I'll talk to you soon. Appreciate it. We can just make things get reconnected. Thank you.
Love to gouge you for unlimited data. Come on. With T-Mobile One, you get unlimited at a price that doesn't break the bank. Right now, get two lines for just $100 a month with autopay. Taxes and fees included. All unlimited.